At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Claire Fallon.
And I'm Emma Gray.
We are friends and reality dating show fans, and the only thing we love as much as love stories is lovingly snarking on them.
Whether you love love or love to hate it, listen to Love to See It, our podcast dissecting all the romance we see on screen.
From reality dating shows like The Bachelor and Love is Blind to classic rom-coms like You've Got Mail, we recap in obsessive detail and unpack all the weird messages they send us about love, sex, and dating.
Listen to Love to See It on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
He's Brian Morris, and he's next.
And now, from the legendary Studio B, so you're in Seattle with Gregor.
Brian is such a fascinating man with a huge history in theater arts. He's been one of the leaders. He's at the foreground of what has become a crazy cosplay play place. Cosplay is costume play, where people dress up as their favorite characters and show up to hang out and nerd out with one another, oftentimes at things like Comic-Cons and Sakura-Con, and also sometimes just on the weekend at Brian's house, where they all get together and they work on stuff. Now, I found out about that from him here just after Emerald City Comic-Con. I've been to his lab to check it out, and what you find is a group of people all working on their own thing, helping each other, and every shelf and every nook and cranny has some different thing that you can use, whether from making wings for your back for an elaborate costume, to just the right amount of, well, I don't know the name of any of the materials, but the rubbery or putty-based stuff that you would use to make a rad-looking costume.
I have a little bit of a cough today.
Yeah. Too much talking over loud noises at Comic-Con?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you do all 4 days?
Yep, 4 days, 3 panels, 4 different costumes.
Wow. And, what were the panels?
First panel was on basic cosplay construction and building.
Cool. Were you hosting it?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was one of the panelists. And then the second panel I was on was cosplay photography, because I'm a commercial photographer.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So that's my day job.
Cool.
I'm a commercial photographer and a licensed drone pilot.
Wow. And, what a combination of things you do.
Yeah. And then the third one is what I call our dream team. I've gathered together 6 of the top cosplayers in the Northwest, and we put on panels at every convention and talk about our epic costumes and how we build them and what inspires us and stuff. So
that's cool. The drone piloting, man. I tried flying a drone. It is really difficult.
Yeah. I've been doing that for about 4 years now.
Does it get easier as you start to do it a little bit more?
Just like anything else, it becomes second nature to you. People ask me, like, how long did it take you to learn? I'm like, it was a 6-month crash course.
Literally.
Crash course, yes.
Are you flying drones with the goggles on so you see what it sees? Or are you flying it by just your sight, your line of sight?
Well, according to FAA regulations, those goggles are not legal. You have to have line of sight of the drone when you're flying it, commercially, that is. Mm-hmm. But I do have a large monitor that I can see exactly what it sees as well.
Oh, cool. So if you're going to use it for commercial filming, then you kind of need to see what it's seeing to make sure you're
getting
the shot.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah. Okay, so
Wow, I don't even know where to begin with how much work goes into cosplay and how you get to the point where you're hosting a panel on it. But let's start with what you dressed up as for Emerald City Comic Con 2017.
Yeah, so I have a whole bunch of costumes that I have developed over the years. This stable that I had for Emerald City Comic Con this year, the first day on Thursday was Soldier 76, and he is a character from Blizzard's newest game, Overwatch.
Okay.
And he's a very, very popular. Overwatch is like incredibly popular right now. It's just like everywhere you go, everybody is doing Overwatch characters. And so I have a really screen accurate Soldier 76 that I do. So that was for Thursday. And the interesting thing about Soldier 76 is that he actually is an old guy. He's one of the older members of the Overwatch team, and one of his favorite lines is, not a young man anymore.
Cool.
So after the con, that was my motto. I'm not a young man anymore. So that was Thursday. That was a lot of fun. Friday, I have a movie screen accurate cosplay costume of Crossbones. And if you're not familiar with Crossbones, he is the villain who first appears, well, he appears in several movies, but in the Captain America Civil War movie, he is the villain who appears right at the very beginning, who kind of kickstarts everything off. And he has the mask like I brought here, and he's all dressed up. People get mixed up with Punisher a lot, but he's very distinguished. He's an iconic evil villain with the whole Avenger series.
Black helmet, white face.
Yeah, yeah. Which I also found out is if you are going to be a villain and you are going to fight people, do not wear a helmet. You cannot see out of them. So, but it's screen accurate. Last year at Rose City Comic Con, I had my photograph taken with Stan Lee. And as I was walking out Stan Lee, he gave me a fist bump and says, awesome costume. And then this year I met him again and got the costume signed. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, it's probably, I'd say, 95% screen accurate from actually what the movie is. So it's one of the top Crossbone cosplays in existence.
You've mentioned this a few times now, the screen accuracy. And
yeah.
How important is that to the inside the world of cosplay? Because to me, just, you know, people just even taking a stab at it and having Mom sew up just a cool, like, Link from Zelda jacket or something like that is neat. But how important, once you get serious about it, is the accuracy?
It kind of depends on the character you're playing. But for myself, like when I did Crossbones, it was super important to me that I wanted to create a character that was duplicated. It was exactly what was represented on there. There's a whole variety of different types of levels of cosplaying, and you can do the, hey, I put Zelda on my t-shirt and I'm cosplaying, and that's cool. That's where you're at, and everybody should enjoy that. For myself, I've been doing this long enough where the accuracy is what's challenging to me. So for for Crossbones, I actually went and counted on the back of his jackets the number of squares on his vest and how the stitching was and where it went over his shoulder and how the length of it was and the number of rivets. And getting down to, you count the rivets up and which ones are rusty and which ones are painted over. Because I wanted, when I stood there, I wanted people just to like, oh my goodness, that's Crossbones exactly right there. There's a whole variety of different levels of cosplaying, and no level is bad. They're all great to where you're at. When you get to the level of what we call epic, or I don't know what you want to call it, professional, or to the top level of cosplaying, the details in the costume is what really matters. It's the little tiny things that you can pull out of the costume that you can put into your own that somebody else might miss. And they may not even see it when you're standing there, but you know it's there. So like on Crossbones, he has a black turtleneck. He has a tactical jacket. He has a armor-proof vest on it. And then he has his tactical armor on the outside. Each of those parts are really important that you get the exact you know, duplication on that so that it matches the armor and stuff.
That's fantastic. When you're hosting a panel, I mean, are you encouraging people to find little specifics then to like to hone in to try and make it closer?
Exactly. That's probably that step where you want to take a costume and you want to bring it to that next level is the detail. And you can find this, look at movies, theater, anything where you have professional costuming going on. My background is actually in theater. And puppetry. I'm actually a master puppeteer as well. And
what don't you do? This is incredible.
In theater, in movies, if you go and you look at the detail that is in, I'll give you an example. Is the latest Marvel movie Doctor Strange?
Okay.
And if you look at the detail orientated in his costume, it's just phenomenal. It's just incredible. Even if you opened up his cloak. The inside of the cloak, which you hardly ever rarely see in the movie, but it is detailed, stitched, and the patterning and the pieces that they have in there, patched work in there, are incredibly detailed. And that's really what we're striving to do as cosplayers, is to get to that point where we can, those minute little details, we can put them into our costume. And again, if you don't have those, it's not bad. But that's where we strive to do, is those little tiny details. And somebody may not even see them, but they're there.
How about with contesting and stuff? So if you're having a costume contest and there's people are going to be judged on their costumes, it's not whoever gets the details just right all the time, right? There has to be more to it than that.
Oh, no. Yeah. So any kind of contest you go into, and I don't care what kind of a contest, it's dependent upon the judges and where their bent is. So you might have a music contest, and you know, if you come in and you're the best violinist in a rock concert contest, you're not going to place very high. And so any cosplay costume contest, number one, you have to realize you're being judged by people who have different bents in life. They like different types of costumes. They might
A guy who doesn't like Marvel for some reason, and you show up in a Marvel costume, you might
or maybe it's more likely like he really likes foam armor and he's really into that, or maybe he's really into casting, or you might get a seamstress who's just loves sewing. So they have their different bents and their different favorite places, and you just kind of have to realize that any contest you go into, that's what you're up against, is those judges. And the first thing you need to realize is these are just three people out of 7 billion people in the world, and it's their own opinion. And if you don't win, then it's not the end of the world.
Good advice for anything.
It is. It's like, I know that I love cosplaying, and my cosplay costumes are dead on, and they're amazing. But, like, I was in the costume contest at Emerald City, and I didn't place or win anything. And you're always a little disappointed, you know.
Sure.
But I also realize it's not the end of the world, you know. It was a contest, and the guy who won it, a friend of mine, Chad Marsh, he did this amazing Dragon Slayer golden armor set. And it was phenomenal. And yeah, he deserved to win. It was just amazing. And everybody in their different categories, it's great to see them get those kudos. And you're right. The details aren't always the determining factor. Sometimes it's it might be the finish on it. It might be the types of material they put into it.
Is it ever acting? Is it ever when you get up there and embrace the character to a point?
A little bit. Usually in the costuming, though, it's not, because they're judging the costume and the build on it and how well it was done, and the authenticity of it. Like, I think the guy who came in second place was actually a guy who did a costume for Doctor Strange out of the movie, and it was dead on accurate. It was just beautifully done. So part of that was probably the accuracy of his costume. Sometimes it is the little details. Sometimes it's just the finished product of what it looks like. And sometimes it might just be you know, special effects that just blow you away. And they've just done these cool, like, smoke and lights and things that move and wings that open up. And they're just like, wow, the technology here is just blows you away.
What is it for you? Why cosplay? I know there's an overall experience, but which part of the process is your favorite?
That comes in a bunch of different flavors for a lot of people. For myself, it actually comes down to the challenge of the build. I remember one time, years back, I wanted to go to SakuraCon here in Seattle. It's more of an anime type convention, and I'm not really big into anime. I don't watch a lot of it. I didn't know the characters, but I wanted to go to it. So I asked the guys, I said, what character is over the top? What would blow everybody away if it could be built? And they go, oh, if you could do it, this would be the guy to do it.
What was it?
His name is Abel Nightroad, and he's the lead character from the anime series called Trinity Blood.
Okay.
And he's got 9-foot wings, and he's got these huge hair that goes up in the air, and this incredible costume and everything, and a 10-foot weapon. And when they said that, I go, challenge accepted. Yeah. It's kind of like, hold my beer while I do this type of a thing. With Crossbones, it was the same way. I built the costume before the movie came out. So the challenge was, can I duplicate this? I didn't even have a full set of pictures. I didn't have the video to watch. I didn't have any of that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was built before that all came out. And I had little snippets of behind-the-scenes photos of what his costume was like. And it was like, the challenge is, can you do this? Can you build this? With all the skills you might, you know, and with him, it's sewing and armor building and vacuum forming and riveting and, you know, 3D printing and a whole variety of different skills that you have to pull together in order to put that costume together. So that's really the challenge for me is when I get these big giant ones is just, can you do it? Like the latest one I did, my biggest one for Emerald City Comic Con was Tarok the Talon King. He is a character from World of Warcraft. He is a semi-playable character, but he's the god of one of the races of the people, and he's a bird, and there's a whole race of bird people. And if I were to show you the picture, the detail on it would just blow you away. And it's just phenomenal of the layers of detailing that the game designers put into this. And I sometimes wonder, do you really realize that as a cosplayer we're going to try to do this? Are you trying to drive us insane?
Yeah, is it an idea that they'll make it more difficult to see if you can pull
sometimes,
it off?
Sometimes I actually think that they're going to go, ha, yeah, let's see if you can build this one.
What was his name, Tarok?
Tarok the Talon King, and he stands, the character, when I got it done, it stood over 8.5 feet tall.
Oh my God, are you on stilts?
Yeah. So he had stilts, and he's got, his head actually sits on top of my head. So I'm 6'2", and the stilts put me up another foot above that, and then his head is on top of me. And it's just, yeah, he's like this enormously crazy, huge, tall, giant creature.
It's got to be so difficult to get around. Do you have like a spotter with you or something?
Yep, I had a handler with me. And you basically can't go anywhere without a handler when you're that big, to get through doorways and around people and stuff. And you kind of have to be careful of where you end up at the con as well.
It's a spectacle though, right? I mean, people see you coming when you're 8 feet tall and you're the Talon King. Like you're
pretty much, yeah. It's you're the tallest thing at the con, and everybody else is kind of this little short thing running around you. The really interesting thing when I was in that character was the fact that...
oh, my.
Yeah, that's a picture of him. He's got his weapons and everything, he's 8.5 feet tall, and he's slightly intimidating. He's the biggest thing on the floor. And yet... So a lot of times when you're in these costumes, little kids will... they're afraid of things in costumes that they don't see the human face and whatnot. You
sure,
know, they're
yeah.
afraid of Santa Claus, but Easter Bunny, you know. And I had little tiny kids, 2-3 years old, just coming up and wanting their picture taken with me. It was the most weird thing. And the only thing I could think of was parents telling their kids, oh, he's just a big bird. Because it's kind of what he was. He was just a big, giant bird. And
send that to me if you would, please.
Yeah.
When you get a chance. Well, when we're done here.
Yeah.
Because that has to, I want people to be able to see that.
Yeah. The detail on this guy, that was part of the challenge of building him, was the detail. Could you build something that was that detail orientated? And the skill sets that go into that is what challenged me. I have to keep pushing myself to learn new talents, skills, and abilities and things that I have to learn. So in this particular one for Tarok, it was everything from vacuum forming to working with Warbla and different types of foam.
Well, let's talk about some of this because I'm fascinated by it. Like, you have a helmet here for Crossbones, right?
Yeah.
And do they just sell the Crossbones helmet and you painted it up, or do you have to figure out how to make it your, like, how to actually form that from nothing?
Yes and yes.
Okay.
So you can go out to, and there's China manufacturers right now that will produce that helmet. Originally, when I started designing this character, there were no Crossbones helmets. And so the only thing we could find was a 3D printed model. Somebody had come up with a rough 3D printed model, and I worked with a friend of mine, and we finessed and worked on that 3D model, and the original one that I had was 3D printed out. And then we made a second one to refine it and refine it more and more until it fit perfectly what the character looked like and would fit my head and all that kind of stuff.
To be able to make it the right size for your own head is another challenge all in itself.
Yeah. So
you can 3D print. You said vacuum forming. Is this the idea of having a solid shape and then bending stuff around it?
Or exactly. Yep.
I think I've seen it before, just in, you know, stuff that pops up in my Facebook feed or whatever.
Yeah.
How does it work?
It's styrene plastic is normally what's used, and styrene plastic, like a lot of stuff we use, is called a thermoplastic, which when heated can be formed and molded and shaped. And you have what's called a buck or a master form, and you put this on a grill that's got a bunch of bazillion little holes on it, and you hook up vacuum to it. And literally it's a big old giant shop vac. Hmm. And you heat the plastic up. And there's a variety of ways you can heat it up in ovens or commercially made ones. But once it gets heated up, it's in a frame, and you put the frame down over the buck, and the vacuum actually sucks the plastic down over the buck to perfectly form it.
Oh, interesting. Forgive my very crude way of describing this, but the way you said it, it's sort of like even like a condom would like go down over a shape like that.
Kind
of,
yeah.
Only because you hold it from a frame and then bring it down, and then the vacuum power would make it actually be the right...
A lot of the stormtroopers that you see are vacuum formed that way.
Are those people making their own stormtrooper
sometimes
gear at home?
Yeah, sometimes they'll make it. Vacuum forming is a very popular way of making them because you can make a whole bunch of sets at once, or they'll be made them out of a variety of different. I mean, I've seen them made out of ABS plastic and PVC plastic and even fiberglass.
How long have you been doing this?
So, like I said, my background's in theater and puppetry, and I actually started that when I was fresh out of high school, so some 35 years ago.
Okay.
And so I was heavily involved with puppetry for about, I still am today, but really heavily into about 12 to 15 years, and then it morphed into doing puppetry and theater. And in theater, I did everything from costume design to set design to publishing to producing and directing and everything involved with it. Ran a nonprofit youth performing arts organization for about 5 years. And so that set the stage of all the costume designing, because what cosplayers do today, we've been doing in the theater forever. That's what we do, design costumes. And and somewhere along the line, somebody gave it the name cosplay, costume and play put together. Nice little acronym there. And then they started calling it cosplay. It's designing and replicating characters from stories or game. Now today it's from a whole variety of mediums that they come from. So my first, if you want to call it cosplay, was in 2009. And my sons and I were playing World of Warcraft. I'm sure you're
of course,
familiar with that.
It was a phenomenon that sucked away more productivity hours from our culture than possibly anything else.
Exactly. And we played this pretty much nonstop for about 6 years. And so we're playing it, and Blizzard, who is the parent company for World of Warcraft, they came up. They're going to have BlizzCon, and which was their own Comic-Con or their own convention for their games. And my son and I go, oh, we need to go that. So we got tickets, and I go, if we got tickets, we got to do a costume. So at that point, there was no online tutorials. There wasn't no Facebook didn't even exist. This was back in 2009. I think Facebook maybe started in 2009. I think that's like right when they started. But nobody knew about all the forums, and cosplay wasn't even really a thing. And I go, I'm just going to build a costume because that's what you're supposed to do.
As a theater-minded man would.
That's right. So that was the very first one I built.
Oh, what? What's the character?
So this is a Draenei shaman in tier level 6 Sky Shatter regalia. And you can still find him if you go and Google a shaman cosplayer. This costume will be one of the first ones that come up.
Okay, I will add that to what I write about this. Tell me his name again.
You'll have to get the spelling, but it's from World of Warcraft. Yeah. And he doesn't have a name, but it's a Draenei shaman, and he's wearing tier 6 Sky Shatter regalia armor.
Okay, cool.
Still one of the most beautiful sets that Blizzard ever came up with.
That's fantastic. There's a lot of glowing parts that are like real mystical looking, as a shaman would have. Yeah. It seems like there's
67 volts of electricity powering him.
Wow. And then all kinds of it looks like maybe foam.
Yep,
elements and stuff to give him all the sharp pieces and the sort of armor that he's got on, and I guess that's the tier 6 Sky Shatter regalia armor that I'm talking about.
Yes.
I guess you hit my point right on the head when I asked you how long you've been doing this. I feel like in the last 3 years, maybe a little longer, cosplaying has accelerated at a rate that is...
It has exploded.
Impossible to even track.
Oh, it's exploded. It has... If you were to ask somebody in 2009, could you do this full-time as a living? They'd laugh at you, and they'd go, yeah, right. I mean, it's hard enough getting money to pay for theater or make a living in this. But today, you find people who that's their living. They, I have some really good friends of mine, Bill and Brittany, with Punish Props. And they used to work other jobs, but now their whole job now is doing cosplay. And they do tutorials, and they build things and how to build things, and they put all kinds of stuff on the internet. But that's their full-time job now.
Why is that possible? Like, why can that happen now? It's only been a few years. What has been the factor that allowed for this to become like such to hit like a critical mass almost?
So... I think one of the major things that pushed cosplay to the forefront was the fact that Comic-Con conventions and all the different types of conventions suddenly realized that they reached this critical level where they'd reached all the comic book fans that they were going to reach. But all of a sudden they realized that there were these weird, nerdy, geeky people out there dressing up like their characters and showing up at their conventions. And it was that beautiful blending of good old commercialism of these conventions going, let's grab hold of these people. Let's grab them, make them part of the convention.
So someone was just smart enough to jump on that opportunity.
Exactly. Yeah. That's been slow though. That's been a slow process. But the cosplay community itself is probably more responsible for anybody than doing this, because for so many years, we've had people who have had this geeky, nerdy bent that they want to be involved in this whole world of science fiction and fantasy and gaming and all this, but it was looked down on. It was like, oh, you're kind of one of those geeky kind of people. I mean, when I grew up in high school, it was like, you were really the nerd if you were part of the theater group, or
Stranger Things is a perfect example of what the Netflix show. There's kids playing D&D in their basement is kind of the ideal that was set for this even when I was growing up. They're like, exactly. Nerds playing their dice games, like,
yep.
And then it became those people became adults and
now you've got adults who grew up in that D&D dungeon era,
yeah,
and all of a sudden they realized I can actually do this, and it can be a legitimate part of my life. I can be proud of what I do.
Are there other guys that are from your era that are doing this that you see?
Oh yeah,
guys and gals that are like that found a new way to embrace something that they love.
Oh, yeah.
Another age.
We're actually joking. We're going to get a cosplay together of a bunch of old guys because I'm 57, so.
A spry 57 at that.
So I'm not a young man anymore. That kind of takes people by surprise. But
it's kept you young. I mean, doing this stuff is like embracing your imagination. Obviously, there's something to it.
And now we're seeing what the really fun part is. We're seeing these adults growing up having kids. And their kids embracing it and pulling their kids along with it. And you see whole families. Eric Jones is a really top-notched cosplayer prop builder in the area. His company is called Core Geek. And his wife's parents were at the convention cosplaying. He and his wife cosplay, and his daughters cosplay. And so it's like, well, this amazing family, they've just all generation, and they get involved with it, and it's something so fun that they can all be involved with.
Yeah, some people go to Disneyland. Other people want to spend time arts and crafts together.
Exactly. There's another family from Canada, and the same way, it's a dad and his son and daughter, and they're doing this. They do this incredible Viking set, Nordic sets, and whatnot.
Cool.
And they're the Gessel. I always say their name right, Murray Gessel. I think that's how you pronounce it. But his whole family does this, and they just have a blast. Mom helps out with some of the sewing. She doesn't cosplay, but the dad and the son and the daughter, they all cosplay, and they do this amazing job of it. And it's incredibly this wonderful, healthy environment that people can use their creativity in, that they can join together. In fact, one of the things I said when we're gathered together at Emerald City, I go, isn't it fun that Emerald City decided to have a family reunion for us? That was nice of them. And it was like our whole community here in the Northwest got together to celebrate this incredible arts and crafts, this creativity, this talents and skills that everybody has.
It's fantastic to be able to do that. I'm personally fascinated. I went to Japan recently, and there we are in Tokyo, and I'm insisting that my wife come with me to see the giant Gundam statue that they have there. And then I'm like, wow, I see people at cons dressed up in Gundam armor, and I can't wrap my head around how impossible that seems to actually do something like that. I've done zero cosplay, so I don't have any concept. When it comes to armors and stuff like that, what's the approach to making that? What's the time commitment to getting it done? Before I let you answer that, too, let me add on to that. I remember 2009, it used to be impressive if someone showed up dressed as Master Chief from Halo. That was the thing that people were showing. Wow, he did a Halo guy. That's crazy. And now people are dressing in 8-foot tall birds. So what does it come down to when you want to make those armors and stuff? What's the commitment if I wanted to do it next year for Emerald City Comic Con?
Most cosplayers underestimate the amount of time. When people come up and ask me, they say, oh, how long did it take you? Like Crossbones is a good example. How long did it take you to make that? And I always tell people, minimum of 3 months, might be 6 months. And the majority of the time, like Crossbones, was about a little over 3 months to build it. And the majority of that, like I'd say maybe 60% of that time was researching out the character.
Mm-hmm.
Finding out what it looks like, all the pictures you can get, you know, the various resource material you can have, and what types of materials that would go into building it that would be accurate for it, and a whole variety of questions that you need to ask about that to even before you start building the process at all. The building process can actually go fairly quickly once you get all your research done. And so the two things, of course, is time commitment and how diligent you are in doing your research about it, and how much it's going to cost. And usually the costs, I mean, you can, you know, if you're really thrifty and you go about procuring all your resource material as best you can, it doesn't have to cost a lot. It can, depending on how much you put into it, but usually it's the time commitment that most people underestimate. They don't realize how much time it takes.
I mean, because you're, in a lot of cases, like, if you're going to make, if you're going to be Starscream from the Transformers and you need to make that bubble for the cockpit that would be there when he's transformed into his standing robot version, like, how do you make that? How do you make that bubble? Like, where do you start? You have to maybe learn a whole new set of skills just to make one piece of a
So costume. One of the there, like I said before, there's been a plethora of and just a growing community out there of different resources that people can get their hands on. There's a ton of YouTube videos out there. There are forums on Facebook and other types of forums like the Replica Prop Forum, RPF. They have just tons of people who are putting out tutorials and how-tos and how they did things and how to paint and how to create. So the resources are out there where a single person can go out and start learning how to do all these things. And then there's actual meeting up with other cosplayers and talking with them. So like, once a month at my studio down in Renton, I have what I call an open cosplay workshop. And I have a big, huge, giant garage, and I have a huge workshop. And I invite people, cosplayers, in to build and to learn. And I'm trying to pass on my skills and all my, what I know, my knowledge base to the next generation. And so
wow.
you can find out. That's probably the, I mean, hands-on is definitely the best way to sit down with somebody and just like, you know, oh, this would be the coolest way to do it. And
what was the most challenging medium that you've learned how to do, from vacuum forming to foam to?
Okay, so this is probably one of the most comical things also. So there is a thermal plastic material that's fairly new on the scene. It's been around for, I don't know, 2 or 3 years now, and it's called Warbla. It was originally designed in Germany, I believe, and it is a byproduct of wood and plastic that's blended together to give you this. It's about a 16th of an inch thick. It looks like you made a paste of wood and smeared it all out, but it's all smooth and everything. And you heat it up and you can form it and it can stick to itself, and it's just like magical material. And so many cosplayers just love this stuff. They just thrive on it. And you can make some of the most amazing costumes with Warbla. But I don't like it. And so all the materials that I am most challenged with, it's working with this crazy Warbla stuff. It just doesn't work for me. It's just like I have the hardest time working with it. But it's really incredible stuff. And it's just kind of one of those things when we're panels and whatnot, like in Emerald City, you know, somebody asks, oh, what's your number one mistake? And I piped in, oh, you mean other than working with Warbla? So that's kind of my big challenge, is like, am I ever going to work with Warbla? I don't know. This last costume, one of the biggest challenges was recreating feathers so that and I think this comes along with each costume. There's a part of it that you're like, I've never done this before. How do I do this? Crossbones, I had to create a whole set of actual armor that matched him. And so I had to figure out the forms and vacuum forming it all, the material that I was going to make it out of and how to strap it down. For Tarok, the latest one was he's covered with his head and his body, his arms, just hundreds and hundreds of feathers. And some of them are real and some of them are made out of foam. And And I had to figure out the process of how do I create those feathers so they look real, and the painting process so it matched not only what a real feather would look like, but the character as well. So I don't know if there's any one particular thing that's most challenging, but each character, besides Warbler, yes. I always call it the material, the devil's material. And I know there's a lot of cosplayers out there who just love this stuff, and kudos to them. I work in a lot of different other materials. Tarok had Warbler in it. I used Warbler for certain things. Each character, hopefully, a cosplayer is pushing themselves into new areas that they've never done before to develop new concepts. Like one of my favorite costumes that I do right now is Ash from Evil Dead.
And you nailed it, man.
Thanks. That was a fun one.
I'll post that picture. I'll use that because you already have a resemblance to Bruce.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, you said you're 57 years old, which caught me off guard because...
That's how old he is.
But...
That's how old Bruce is. He's 57. We're exactly the same age.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
But I thought for sure that you were much younger and that you had just done makeup to make yourself be a little bit older to look more like him. So I was pleasantly surprised right now to find out that you are of the same age as he is. That's great.
So like one of the things, I'm not a huge leather worker, but Ash has this Book of the Dead. And it's leather-bound book, and it has a face on the front of it. It glows and all this. So... I'm not a huge leather worker, so my next challenge is I want to learn how to work with leather to make this book. And I don't see it being a big, huge problem. I have friends who work in leather, but that's a challenge. It's like, oh, I want to learn how to do this. I've never done it before, and it should be fun creating something that I've never done before.
This is all fascinating stuff. Tell me about this, about your workshop.
So one of the things... By nature, I'm a teacher. I've taught in a variety of things. I've taught community college, and my whole life, one of my bents in my personality is teaching. I love to train other people in what I do, whether it be photography or puppetry or drama, and now cosplay. And I have had the opportunity to learn so much in my life through all my background and everything. And I also... have the privilege of having a large workshop and a lot of stuff that that I have been fortunate enough to get over the years, and so it's such a joy to me now to be able to open up my life and my workshop and bring other people in and to be able to provide a community spot where they can join other cosplayers and have fun together, that they can learn how to build things they've never done. And just to enjoy this whole world of cosplay, even if they've never done it before.
How do we find out more? What's a good resource to find out more about your work, what you do, what the community is up to?
So
I know you've said Facebook a lot and that there's forums
there's
and stuff.
A variety of different forums. I mean, if you go on Facebook and you just type in cosplay, there are, probably just within the Seattle area here, I can think of right off the top of my head, half a dozen forums that are Seattle or Northwest based around this area that are particularly just for cosplay and the cosplay community. There's some national ones also. Like I mentioned before, the RPF, they're national and a huge resource for learning how to. And locally in the area here, my company name is called Zak Labs, Zaklabs, and you can look at that on Facebook as well and come up with my company and learn about all the scheduling and everything. Like I said, you just type it in Facebook and you'll probably come up with tons of stuff.
Zak Labs, okay, that's fascinating. So as a jumping...
Do you want to know the story behind that?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so when I was first doing... puppetry, the puppets would have costumes, but they'd also have props and they'd have all this cool stuff. Where did it all come from? and the, you know, the little kids that we're doing the show with, is we'd tell them, oh, we made all this stuff at Zach Labs. And we actually had skits that included the scientists that worked at Zach Labs and all the crazy little things that they would make for the puppets at Zach Labs. So as the years went by, when I started getting into doing cosplay, I'm like, well, that's a natural, of course. I'm going to make all my stuff at Zach Labs. And so we actually have Team Zach Lab now, and we have the whole company. It's actually an actual company, a business that I run, and because I do commissions for people and build things for people. But yeah, it all started back with doing puppetry and where things were built from Zach Labs.
Has anyone ever come to you to get a, to build out a costume to do something rad for like Burning Man or anything like that? I feel like that would be a natural way to utilize your strengths.
There's every once in a while people come to me, ask me to build stuff. Last one I did was Dolores from, it was a whole sewing one. It wasn't any armor or anything, but it was sewing for a local cosplayer who wanted the complete dress and the whole get up for Dolores from Westworld. And then people will have me build a variety of different props for them, guns, you know, a bunch of different stuff like that. Occasionally people will go, oh, I really want to build this. Can you build this for me? I want this costume. I'm like, oh, yeah, sure. And they go, well, how much is it going to cost you? And then I give them the price, because it's usually, you know, like if it's a full-blown costume, it could be anywhere from $1,000 to $1,500 for a costume.
Sure. I mean, you just told me it takes 3 to 6 months to sometimes come up with these things.
Yeah, it might be more expensive depending on the how incredible. And then there's just this pause, silence, and like, okay, I'll have to get back with you. He's like, I think I need to save up some money.
Okay, we're going to look at Zach Labs here. I'm going to come out and check out your work because I want to find out more about it. If someone was going to jump into cosplaying, what's a natural first step to take in order to not be in over your head?
Yeah, so getting over your head isn't a bad thing. It's not always a bad thing.
When it comes to creativity, that sounds like a great piece of advice.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you just have to say, you know, I've never done it before. Boom, I'm just going to try and do it. And you might fail, in fact. One of the key things that you ask cosplayers what they consistently do, and it's make mistakes, and they fail. And they don't know what they're doing, so they try it. And they'll try something new until they learn it and they master it.
I mean, same way NASA works, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, anything.
It's, you know, it's life, actually, no matter what you do.
Sure.
I mean, you know, being on the radio, sometimes, you know, you didn't know how to do it.
If you heard my show this morning, I gave myself plenty of opportunity to fail. So.
Yeah. So failure is how we learn. And so failing isn't a bad thing. It's getting in and trying it. What's bad is not trying at all. And so if somebody says, I've never done cosplaying, I want to do a cosplay, you know, for PAX. PAX is coming this fall. Can I build something? And I go, yeah. So here's the first thing would be, are you passionate or about any character, like out of a movie or a book or a video game or even a child story or whatever it is, what's something that's really close to your heart that you would love to do? And that's always an important one to start with, because there will be a time, a month into it, 2 months into it, when you all of a sudden go, I hate this. I never want to see this again. And you have to find that passion and love again for that character. So you find the character. And then it's the process of how do you recreate it? It might be as simple as something as, like, Ash was actually fairly simple. Other than the props I made, it was like I had to find the right color pants and the right color shirt and make some leather stuff on him, you know? Fortunately, I kind of look like Bruce Campbell also. But, you know, it might be as simple as going to the Value Village or Goodwill and looking for the types of clothing. If it's more complex character that you have, then you have to start saying, okay, I have X amount of time until I want to have this done, and what kind of a time frame, how much time can I commit to learning about this and actually putting it into the research and into building it. And that's most, like I said, most people underestimate it. They go, hey, I want something built. Can we have it done by next month? And I'm like, it's like, you mean like in 20 days? How much money do you have? You know, you throw enough money at me, yeah, I'll build it for you in that much time. But people don't realize how long it actually takes, because these are not like, these are one-offs. You're building a costume, and it's not like a you know, production line where you've got 20 of these costumes.
Yeah, you're telling me about vacuum forming. Like, that, you have to make the mold for that, and
exactly.
You're not going to make 50 of those helmets.
No, yeah, yeah.
I mean, maybe you are. I don't know that, actually.
I know. I shouldn't assume. I keep all the stuff that I built in case somebody wants to. So I've had people come up and want me to build the whole crossbones, and I have all the stuff, so I could do it really easily. But usually it's cost prohibitive because they're like, oh, $1,500? Yeah, I'll go cosplay something else.
What's the most you've spent to make a costume or a character?
Probably... Well, I think the Tarok was a little on the pricey side just because there was so many different types of materials. So it might have ranged up into the, just material-wise,
yeah,
probably in the maybe $500 to $600 range of materials.
Okay. And then time is the most valuable asset then.
Time and knowledge of knowing how to do it.
So people could probably, if you wanted to jump in and get a character going, a couple $100 maybe as a...
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. I'd say if you have $300 in your pocket and you've got time to learn how to do it, you can do it.
Okay, so what other events do you have going on? Anything coming up? Or?
Yeah, one of the other really cool things that I'm involved with is called RenCon, Renton City Comic Con. And it's a
Is that new?
It's brand new. Last year was our very first year.
Okay, we have a contact in common. That would be Abby, who introduced me to you, actually,
exactly.
via email for this whole thing.
So I was involved with it. I was on the initial planning committee for putting it together, and the Renton Chamber and Ben just came up with a crazy idea and said, why don't we develop our own Comic-Con? We could do that.
Sure.
And so we gave ourselves a whole whopping 5 months to put it together. And Abby was one of the people I drug in. And I said, Abby, we need you. You need to come and do volunteer work. And so she's our volunteer coordinator. But yeah, we put 5-6 months together. We put this incredible con together, the 3-day con down in Renton, and just blew the doors off the place. And we had like the top cosplayers. We had a contest. We had panelists all weekend from all over the Seattle area.
And that's what's cool here is there's so many people that are involved in awesome nerdy things that,
that
you can get the pros of everything to come out.
Yeah, people came to the con. They go, how did you get all these amazing cosplayers? And I'm like,
well, they drove down the street. And
they're my friends. I invited them and they came. And so
when is the con?
So last year it happened on Halloween, Halloween weekend.
Yeah.
This next year, we're still nailing down, because we're so new, we're still nailing down the venue and the date, but it'll happen later in the year.
Okay.
And we'll let everybody know. But again, we're gaming and aiming to blow the doors off it again.
How many cons a year for you?
Probably maybe half a dozen.
Okay. So
half a dozen
gives
cons.
You a couple months between to come up with
so
the costumes.
So there's always Emerald City here, Emerald City Comic Con. There's PAX. There's Sakura Con, Rose City Con, Comic Con down in Portland. There's Fan Con up in Vancouver. You've got Lilac Con over at Spokane. Jet City Comic Con is in is in Tacoma. You got Geek Girl here in Seattle.
Yeah, yeah, great.
So,
how many costumes are you doing for each of these?
Depends on how long the con is. So I'll do a different costume for each day. If it's a 2-day, I'll have a couple different costumes.
New each time?
No, not normally. Sometimes I like to build on them. So if I have my stable ones that I'll always do will be Crossbones, Soldier 76, and now Ash. And now I'm having a team of people come along with Ash with me, so we'll have all three of us. And
cool.
So there might be a new one on the horizon. Right now, I actually don't have an upcoming costume. You know, the next big great thing.
Sure.
I'm still looking for that, what I might be passionate about building. But in the meantime, I want to flesh out the whole Ash versus Evil Dead. And I've got a couple other people who are going to come along, and we're going to make his automatic hand and the Book of the Dead. And we'll kind of fill out that whole cosplay until it gets done. And then I'll probably come up with something epic after that.
Renton City Comic Con also.
Yep. RenCon. Yeah.
That's fantastic that it's blowing up like that.
It is. And it was the talk of the town. I mean, people just loved going to it. It just had such a rich family value to it and cosplay value to it.
Yeah.
But we also, the other really cool thing about RenCon is that we were blending real science together with Comic-Con. So we actually had a whole panel series of real scientists, like from NASA, come in talking about science and virtual reality. And we had a robotics club come in. A robotics club come in from the city of Renton. And
get back with me when you're when it's time for you to talk about this again and to promote it, because I'm fascinated by it. I host a segment called Nerd Talk every day.
Yeah.
And so to be able to...
Well, definitely will. Yeah. We've got a meeting coming up tomorrow that we're going to hit it hard and fast. And
yeah, that's great, man. It's fantastic to get another one launched, especially when the appetite is so huge for it that it can still be sustained. It's great to be able to give people... It's hard to come to Seattle. It's expensive to come into Seattle to go to a con like that and to spend the money at the door, at the parking, on the food and everything.
Yep.
So to be able to put it in people's own backyards a little bit more is fascinating. So,
yeah.
Okay, cool. So we'll circle back around for
RenCon. We'll get back with you when we get more details.
Ah, that's fantastic. Thanks for coming in, dude.
Yeah.
You've been listening to So You're in Seattle with Gregor. Follow him on Twitter at HeyGregor. Find more episodes online at SoYou'reInSeattle.com. So You're in Seattle is a Burrito Butt production.
Yeah, you're a good dog, Chowder.